We passed out these dash four amendments and have heard some comments from the governor's citizens representative and so on. There are some different ideas that have been passed out. One is that the Housing Committee passed out a bill, House Bill 2514, which is called in our committee the Technical Assistance Bill. And this bill gives the Housing Division authority to develop a housing account. And this housing account funds what's known as technical assistance. There is money in the Housing Division, but they don't have access to it because they're not statutorily allowed to have access to it. This bill gives them access to that money to develop programs, and they would cover things like farm worker housing and so on. And what technical assistance does is helps people fill out the forms to give to the feds to get the big federal dollars in. The thought is to have, because this particular bill would cost between $60,000 and $80,000 to implement for the biennium, is to maybe somehow put it in there with that technical assistance bill, which is already passed out of the House, but somehow draft amendments to 2520 so that it would dovetail that particular bill to use the Housing Division as the place where these activities would take place, and maybe not place it in the governor's office. So that's one kind of thought, and have a pilot program be established there. I don't think it's necessarily the thought that of the committee that the citizens' representative would just deal strictly with dispute resolution to the level of mediation. I think that they would handle citizen complaints much like the citizens' representative does now. So,
we have six additional witnesses signed up for public hearing. Are you
done?
Committee, more questions? Thanks,
Legislative
Laurie.
Council is also here on this. If you care to ask Legislative Council anything, who drafted, helped draft this.
And Ms. Hanna is here too. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Signed up for public hearing is Donald Nielsen.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Donald Nielsen. I'm the state president for OSTA. I have an office here in the Kaiser area. I live in 3800 Mountain View Drive Southeast, Albany, Oregon, space number 103. I believe this is important. I've heard this testimony. I had some testimony written up here. I will go through some of it. But I think this, like the importance of this bill, is a couple of the examples I wrote in there that we need somebody. If she has 500 things on the books now that haven't got to what you're going to have at the end of next month, it's something that I don't think, I think this issue, where we have over 200,000 people, over 100 and some thousand mobile homes, and over 200,000 people that live in these, we have over 1,100 parks in the state of Oregon. We have issues that have confronted the people that have sat back, and things have just blossomed out to the fact that where Oregon has become the meeting place of the corporations and the park owners that want to buy these parks from out of state is our biggest problem. That come in here and raise these rents, decrease the services of these people. I got one park, I wrote into this issue, it's in my area down in Albany, that they were paying $4.85 to pick up this garbage. They thought they could save $2 per home for 104 homes by putting in dumpsters on four corners. This park has been in existence since the 1950s. The people in that park average 70 years old, and I picked up a garbage sack and not only carry it to the corner for dumping, I don't even know some of these people could even lift it up over the dumpster. And they decreased their service. So we went to the attorney and they talked to their attorney and they said, well, yeah, we understand that, so we will have curbside services like we've always had, but we've been reviewing the park and we need a lot of maintenance in here, so we're going to raise your rent $18 a month to people that are 70 and 80 years old. This is what we, this is one of the issues, and this is not only one, this is coming in from all over the state that these problems exist, that we need somebody that can sit down. To me, that's retaliation, but you can't prove it. That they retaliated on these people because they complained about having the having one of the services they've had since the 50s decreased. They're increasing the rents, they're treating these people, so they sit back and what have we got? They're paying the $18. They said, we'll call a meeting, but the $18 went through, and these people are on fixed incomes. They have no money. They got some of these people are living on $400 a month. They don't even have the decent, the food. The only thing they do have is probably a fairly nice park, and the park is deteriorating. These are the issues. We've had another park where they decreased the service, said if we decrease this service, it'll save you a rent increase. The people, they didn't come to our office, or we would have told them. So they signed a form to decrease this service. 2 months later, they got a notice of a 90-day rent increase because they thought they were needed, but this they'd already give up the right in writing of their decrease in service because they took the word, the good faith of the management. These are things that are happening all over the state. We have problems that, that you don't even understand, and that people, you can't even comply with, an ordinary person will know. And she mentioned apartments. You can't compete. We got $30,000, $40,000 investments. We put them on a man's land in good faith. We sign a contract with this man. He tells us, and we say, we'll pay our rent by the 5th of the month. We pay our rent by the 5th of the month. He said, you'll have your place all updated in 30 days after you move in. We do this. So we go through this 6 months later. He comes in and says, I want to decrease your service. Why in the world do we have to live up to the contract we signed? And in the same voice, he can come around and break the contract he wants. In the same, he signed it and we both signed it. We are not tenants. We are partners in a business. When we sign a contract, I don't care where you go, and I've been in business all my life, that when we sign a business, we're a partnership. If I sign a contract with somebody, I consider myself a partner in this venture. If he's in, if we've helped increase this man's $60,000 property into a $3 million real estate investment, that's fine. More power to this man. But why shouldn't I be given some consideration? And why shouldn't we have, and if these people don't want to abide by the problems we have and the things that we try to go to in good faith, then why shouldn't the state of Oregon, if they can protect other people, they can protect your criminal rights, they can protect your nursing homes like she stated, why can't we have a committee that will sit for 200,000 people in the state of Oregon to help protect the rights of our seniors and our new people and the people coming in an organization that we need?
Mr. Nielsen?
Yes.
Have you ever had a chat with the citizens representative in the governor's office about the decision?
I just heard about it yesterday, Pam Collins. Mm-hmm. I just heard about Ms. Collins' proposal yesterday, but I don't think that it's the proper thing. That I don't think they can handle it the way they said as citizens representative. I don't see how they could handle the cases that are mobile homes. I got letters in our files that she'd be 100 years getting to them, and she can't. They got 500 backlog now, is the thing that I'm saying. I think that it's up to our legislatures and our representatives, and we plead for help. Our people are pleading. I don't care if you go to Medford, she talked Medford, Nancy Peterson's Representative Peterson's. You talk Lane County, you talk Salem, you talk Portland. They got hectic problems. You got Eastern Oregon, you got places on the coast that hasn't ever been reorganized, that we got problems, that I got letters, that I could give you copies of letters I got, and I go and call on them, and I write to them and say, what can I do? And they'll say, well, we don't want to be the instigator because we're scared. They're scared of the landlord. And is that any way to live when you're 65, 70 years old, to be scared of a landlord, and we have no place to go besides an attorney? And you hire an attorney, and the first thing is a knock on the door and says, if you don't like it, move. I wouldn't want my folks living under that condition. And I know you folks wouldn't either. And these are the things, we're not asking for everything. What we want is some help. And we come to you people because you are the only ones that can help us in this livability.
Thank you. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You cited a couple of numbers there in your opening statement about the number of parks. I think you suggested about 1,100.
That was the last figure that I was told, and I was told to be by some park owner himself, and that's the figure I have.
Okay, we have 1,400, which is...
That could be 14. Now, this has been a couple of years ago.
The largest difference I see, and it may just be what the definition of tenants is, but this staff analysis has 50,000, and I think you said something in the neighborhood of 200,000 tenants.
We figure there's 200. We figure there's over about 80,000 people that live in parks and about 107,000 people that have mobile homes. This is a couple of years ago figures I have, but we figure 1.9 people to a home. And this is what I'm represented on, is the figure that if we have 100,000, 108,000 mobile homes, if we probably have 200,000 residents that live in these homes.
And
80,000, we figured there's around 80,000. My last figure, I figured around 80,000 people that live in parks. So that'd be close to 160,000, 70,000 people that are mobile home people. These are figures that were told to me by a very substantial source here a couple of years ago that I know.
Okay. In your own situation, or the usual situation, if there is such a thing, on the garbage rates increase mm-hmm. and so forth, is that something that is normally endured by the individual park resident, or is that something that is passed on from the landlord to you, or how does that work?
Representative Miller, that is in our contracts, usually they'll have a statement in that these services will be provided by the landlord and these services will be provided by the tenant. And usually in there, the most 90% of the older contracts, how they're coming out now, there are different ones coming out now, but they state that garbage and sewer, water, these things are part of the rental agreement, that they will pay for these rental agreements on the payment of rent. And so it's covered. And these are contracts that are signed in contracts where they're decreasing it, and our people have no way to go.
My question is, if
Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the garbage haulers increase their rates, do you find that fair or unfair that those costs would then be borne by the park?
I don't think that I think that this bill here, like it states in here, that they will sit down and discuss this. I think if there's an increase in rent, I know our park, they increase the rents, and we think it's a legitimate one, fine. I don't think the people complain to the much of an increase in service costs to an increase in rent as they do that they increase the rents like this park, $18 for something that they've been paying for all these years. And it's just unwarranted. What warrant do they have? This park has made money. It's sold to a California outfit for a couple million dollars. This corporation comes in, and right away, all they want is more money. These other people made a living at it. I'm not saying that there's not a fair return on your money, but I think that there is a limit to what the people can pay, and on a person that's making $400 and some a month, Social Security check and lived in a park, and when they moved in, they were said, this is a livable park for you and you live the rest. That why? Because they get a $2 rent sewage raise or a $2 per home a garbage increase, that they should be able to play a $10 or a $12 rent increase when the park is profitable to these landlords. I don't think the problem is there. If they got a $2 rent in the increase in their garbage service, come and tell the people, and I'll bet say, well, if you got a $2, we'll pay the $2. Give us a $2. But there's no such thing as a $2 rent increase. It's a $10, $20, $25, $30 rent increase nowadays, and it's unconscionable.
One further question, Mr. Chairman.
Just one further?
Sure. You want to cut me off now, or? gosh. It had to do with a statement you made regarding signing of the contract with the park owner, and mm-hmm. in your mind, whenever you sign a contract with someone, you become a partner.
I don't mean a partner in his monies. I mean a partnership into something that we both agree on, that I'll do my share, you do your share, we got a livable, you furnish the land, I'll make it presentable for you, and I'll do my share. And I think that's a partnership, yes. That's what I mean by it. Not in the money-wise or the income or... I mean, it's in the upkeep of the park, and I'll do mine, I'll make your park representable and worth more money to you, and in return, I want to be treated fairly.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dix, did you have a question?
No, I was just gonna, isn't part, some of the rate, the increases come from, for instance, if you got a jacuzzi in the park, and they then tell you that in order to fix the jacuzzi, it's an extra $10 a month. Aren't there a lot of parks where the similar situations like a jacuzzi, that occurs, and in fact, the jacuzzi's never fixed?
Correctly. We have parks that, there's one park in particular, it's about, over a pool, that they got a rent increase in 84, somewhere's in there, $15 a month, and it's in writing that they will, that money is to be used for the repair of the pool, for put the pool in use, and that pool is still closed. And they've been paying $15 a month. I think the last figure that I was told by some of the people in the park that amounted to $49,000 already, and they still haven't had it put in the water. These are things that are happening, and there's no way to go. And these people come up and say, they said, if you don't like it, move, or go get an attorney, and then who we fight the courts. And the people do not have the money. We can't compete with the Park Owners Association.
One of the things, Mr. Chair, I know Congressman DeFazio is working on a bill that would allow park owners to purchase parks in a cooperative situation. One of the things that has become evident in working with him on the bill is the original tax bill that was passed in 1981 made it very beneficial for people to purchase parks. They then would exhaust the tax benefits in owning those parks and pass them on to someone else, almost in a cyclical fashion. So you pass on park from one owner to another owner to another owner until each owner is able to exhaust the tax loophole that particular park provided. That is going to diminish, hopefully, in a substantial fashion due to the Packwood tax reform bill. But the 1981 version did make it highly lucrative for someone to come in from California, purchase a mobile home park. Each time it's purchased, as you stated, that the new person comes in and increases the contract by $10 or $20 for that land. So that was one of the problems we've had up to this point.
It's the same 1981 tax bill. It's the same one that presumed all waiters and waitresses made 8%.
That's right.
We thank you very much for your
time. Thank you very much for your time.
Committee members, there are Representative Dix and myself will be continuing on at 6 o'clock here for our next hearing. So, and we do have a bunch of bills, an additional bill besides this one. So consider that in the questions that you put to the witnesses. And also consider that this bill has had a prior hearing and some recommendations. Earl, from OSTA, last name begins with W.
I have a statement if you would like.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Well, Representative Miller.
No, want me to pull the...
Good idea. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Earl Wetzel. I'm the district director for OSTA in East Multnomah County and also vice president of the state organization. I will apologize for some of the scratching on the papers that I gave you, but I had not seen the amended bill until today, and so I did a little scratching on it. There are well over 100,000 mobile homes in Oregon. Approximately 80% of them are owned and occupied by senior citizens, many of whom are elderly widows. There are numerous laws in the Landlord-Tenant Act, but there is no method of enforcement other than to sue the offender with all the trauma and expense of such actions. Most senior citizens have neither the finances or the heart to become involved in a long court fight, so they have just been taking whatever is handed out to them. While it is most distasteful to them, they don't know just what to do. Now, I might say about a month ago, I first heard of such a thing as an ombudsman or anyone in the state office who could help people who had problems. I didn't know there was such a thing existing. And when the Housing Committee had a public meeting in Portland, Laurie Stillman, Skillman told us that there was such a person, and that's the first any of us knew about it. I went around to 11 ports in East Multnomah County and asked them if they knew anything about such a person, and not a one of them did. So that's why the office hasn't been flooded with the reports. Oregon has no law regulating rents of any kind, and I will add a little statement that's not in the written statement. That excludes, I didn't think of low-cost housing and some of those things that are governed by federal regulations. So residents are left to the mercy of landlords, some of which are greedy and avaricious. Now, I don't want you to think that I'm saying all landlords are in that category, because they aren't.
We read your word, some.
Beg pardon?
We read your word, some.
Oh, okay, very good. In recent years, many states have adopted some sort of rent control, so out-of-state investment firms have bought mobile home parks in Oregon. Then they have hired or formed management firms to run the parks. And I understand that one such management firm has been established in the state of Oregon, and they have absolute control of 38 mobile parks. And when they say jump, it isn't a question of whether you jump, it's how high you jump. And that's the way many of our elderly people are treated. The result is that residents never see the owners, they never get to protest for injustices. All that these absentee owners are interested in is in the profits, and rents spiral upward as maintenance and services are reduced. I could give you situation after situation if we had time and you had the patience to listen to them. I won't try to do it now, but there are a lot of them. Laws relating to landlord tenants are evaded, avoided, and broken with no recourse except to bring suit. And at the present time, I know of several suits where people have just got to the end of their resources and they pool their funds together and are suing the landlords, but you don't have much of a chance. House Bill 2520 takes a step in the right direction of easing the situation for both sides, because it isn't pleasant, I'm sure, for the owners and managers of mobile parks to know that the people that are living in the parks surrounding them hate them and would like to get rid of them, so it would help both parks. While our laws permit landlords to raise rents as much and as often as they wish, they, the laws, at the same time stifle the law of supply and demand by making it almost impossible for a mobile homeowner to place his home on his own lot anywhere, at least in the metro area. The same laws and ordinances put roadblocks in the way of anyone who might want to create a new park. We certainly agree that an investor has a right to make a reasonable profit on his investment, but who is to judge what is a reasonable return? Is it the absentee landlord interested only in profits, or should it be an official who can be neutral and consider both interests? Now, I've had to change here some because I have Section 5 on page 1 and so on, and that has been changed now according to this dash 4 that's out now. But the person who is an authority should have the authority to investigate and resolve complaints, and I took that word from the original bill, between residents and management. With this bill becoming law, there will be less complaints by far, and far less Social Security dollars going down the drain in the next decade. I certainly urge passage of this bill, but from what I've heard today, I would say that we are not adamant on this particular bill, but we do want some association, some person, some ombudsman or some citizen defense or something that can get in between management and tenants and decide what is right and what is wrong. I have seen cases, ladies and gentlemen, in which the garbage disposal has been changed from pickup at the home to a couple of dumpsters in the park. And if you see an elderly lady, 75 or 80, and I'm not a lady, but I'm almost 80, If you see them struggling down the street with a sack of garbage trying to get it down to a dumpster, you'll know what I mean. So as Don Nielsen has said, we've come to you for help. You're the only ones we come to. We haven't got thousands of dollars to put into attorney's fees, and so we respectfully request that you seriously consider the plight that these 200,000 mobile home owners are in. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Wetzel.
Thank you.
Don Miner. Well, Don's coming up. It's about 25 to 4. Those people that are here for the civil commitment work session, at the earliest we'll get to it, it'll be 4 o'clock, just for your information.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Don Miner. I'm here on behalf of Oregon Manufactured Housing Association. For those of you who don't know me, our association represents manufacturers and dealers of these products. We generally support the idea of an inexpensive, rapid dispute resolution mechanism, something that can solve problems between landlords and tenants quickly and inexpensively. Our one concern with the Dash 4 amendments is that it appears to get into the element of rents. We don't believe that that is a subject that is that should be resolved in any form other than simply between landlords and tenants. But there are a variety of other problems that are properly the subject of a dispute resolution process. People who live in mobile home parks are in a strange position. They own a home. They have substantial investments in the property itself, in the realty itself. They have foundations, they have decks, they have gardens, they have considerable expenses that distinguish them from people who are simply tenants in an apartment setting. Folks in a mobile home park don't have the luxury of just picking up and moving if they can't get along with their landlord. In our business, in the manufacturing end of the business, if there's a consumer problem, there's a resolution process. The state of Oregon or the federal government through the Department of Commerce can simply step in and require that we solve the problem. They have powers including a recall of the homes. If there's a difficulty between the dealer and the consumer, the state of Oregon through its builders board steps in, they'll resolve that problem one way or another. We have bonds that we post, and they can even attach those to make sure that the problems are solved. We don't think that it's unreasonable to have a similar process for disputes between the landlord and the tenant in a mobile home park setting. That concludes my remarks. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
W.R. Norte.
Excuse me, Mr. Charlin and members of the committee. I'm W.R. Bud Nort. I'm the vice chairman of the Mobile Homeowners Association, and I live at 868 Southwest Liberty Bell Drive in the Laurel, Oregon. Representing Bauman's, heard that several times. But
nice to see you again.
I'm in a peculiar position. I built my testimony that I wrote on 2520, 2 and 1, and haven't seen number 4.
Well, you should be, so we'll have copies. We should have copies over on the desk, and if we don't, we'll certainly.
Well, I went three times trying to find them, and there was nothing there. But let me digress from my testimony a little bit. Leave it as it is. There's a couple of comments. Thank you. Anyway, let me.
You want me to put you on last and let you read those for a few minutes?
That'd be fine.
Okay.
Sure.
Call Howard Hansen.
My name is Howard Hansen. I'm a mobile home owner. I've been the owner of that home for 16 years. I live in Gresham, Oregon, at 3200 Southeast Palmquist Road, space number 16. The first time I heard of the citizens representative of Pam Collins was today when I met her. I am one of those at the present time that have run out of patience and have been involved in litigation. This occurred when we had the last rent increase at our park, and the services and amenities that I bought on the way in have totally vanished. There's been no maintenance on it. And in fact, when the owner of that property died in 1980, there was no more maintenance done in the park other than weed cutting and a few things like that. We presently went through a five-day trial in Portland. It turned out adversely to me, and at the present time I'm under a FED type judgment from the court to be moved out of the park, moving my home by the 31st of July. That's 90 days. I was amazed in going through the court. First of all, the judges are not familiar with the landlord-tenant laws that have anything to do with mobile homes. They readily admit that, and yet they sit on the bench and they call the shots in this court. Obviously, we'll be going to the...